This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Well, he went down to dinner in his Sunday best. Excitable boy, they all said. And he propped the pot roast all over his chest. Excitable boy, they all said. Well, he's just an excitable boy.
Hello, everybody. Bob Main here. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Show. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 108, to be exact. You've tuned into a practical firearm show because I am not a gunsmith. I'm not ex-law enforcement. I am not ex-military or even a firearms trainer. I'm just a regular guy, and I just come and talk to you on this show about firearms from an everyday guy's point of view. I'm just a Yankee with a gun, born in New York City, raised in Wisconsin, now live in the great gun-friendly state of Texas. Got another interview show for you. We're going to talk about some survival guns today. Those of you who have been listening to me long enough, you know that I'm into preparedness as well. I do another show called Today's Survival Show, and I talk about common sense, no tin foil hat preparedness type subjects on that show. So recently I had an opportunity to interview a guy who is another podcaster. He has a podcast on preparedness and survival. I'll tell you a little bit about him in a minute, and he's going to introduce himself to you as well. But I like to look at my firearms collection from a survival type of view as well. In other words, I think about what do I need in case the crap hits the fan. Now, you know what? This is something we don't want to think about. But let me ask you this. Why do you carry a gun? You carry a gun probably because you're into some level of preparedness, right? You probably believe in preparedness of some type, and that's why you carry a firearm. You want to be prepared in case you're attacked, plain and simple. So it really is a form of preparedness to carry a gun. Well, I like to look at it beyond that. Not just a handgun, but let's see, what kind of shotguns do I need? What kind of rifles do I need? Do I need a .22? What am I going to use a .22 for? In this volatile world that we live in, I think it's important that we look at it from this point of view. So every once in a while, I like to change the subject matter up a little bit on this show and kind of look at this from a survival preparedness perspective, and that's what we're going to do in this show. A couple of announcements I want to get out of the way real quick. Please make sure that you join the Gun Rights Radio Network forum. There's a lot of good people on there. Check me out on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. You can search Handgun World on all of those, and you should be able to pull me up. Don't forget about Shooters Legion. I've got a page on there as well. There's all kinds of ways to contact me. The website is www.handgunworld.com. And if you want to email me directly, that is bob@handgunworld.com. That's it. I don't like this show to be real commercial. Those are the announcements. Got a few more things that I want to talk to you about when this interview is over. But recently, I had the chance to talk to a gentleman called Chip Monk. That is his name, Chip, M-O-N-K. Monk, and I thought it was kind of funny when I first heard it, but he does explain himself in this. But this is a very good interview because he brings up a lot of really good points about guns in general. And we talk about long guns, we talk about handguns and shotguns and .22s and things like that. I think you'll be real pleased with it. So in a minute, I'm going to go ahead and turn the interview on. And also let you know that I'm going to cover some listener feedback. I've been getting a lot of really good emails lately. So stay tuned after the interview is over, and I'll cover the listener feedback. There's a lot of really good emails I've received lately. I want you to know, folks, that I do intend to respond to your emails as often as I can. Sometimes they pile up. As this show gets more and more popular, more and more emails coming in. But I got to tell you guys, I love it when you send me this stuff. So please keep doing it, okay? So without any further ado, let's take a quick break. Just a quick shout out from the Gun Rights Radio Network and gunfacts.info. I'll play that for you here real quick, and then you'll hear the interview come on shortly after that. Don't go away.
A woman is approximately 10 times more likely to be successfully raped when she doesn't have a gun, according to a Department of Justice study. This explains why women in the United States use firearms about 200,000 times a year to stop sexual assaults. It also explains why more than 40% of women own or already have access to a firearm. So why do some politicians want to disarm women? Maybe rape isn't a serious enough crime in their minds, or maybe they don't want to stare down the wrong end of your barrel.
Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, folks, for the main topic of this show, I have a special guest. I have Chipmunk on the line. He is the host of the Chipmunk Family Survival Podcast. How you doing, Chip?
Doing well, Bob. Thanks for having me on, sir.
Hey, not a problem. You're a podcaster like me, and I guess what I'd like to do, you know, we have a topic we're going to discuss. We're going to talk about survival firearms and things like that, but why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, how you started into podcasting, why you started doing it, and so forth, and I'll give you the floor here for a minute or two to introduce yourself.
All right. Well, thanks, Bob. I guess I am an accidental podcaster. It wasn't really in my plan to get into this field and get involved in doing something like this. I kind of grew up in a very rural setting and had a natural predisposition towards survival and preparedness topics and things along those lines. And when I was a kid, my dad would go to the newsstand and buy some of the popular survival magazines of the time, like American Survival Guide and Survive and stuff like that. So I grew up kind of reading some of those, and I was very much involved in outdoors type things, just because we lived up in the mountains, and a lot of my family, they were really leftovers from the era of the Depression in a lot of ways. They were very rural folk, and my grandmother was in her 70s and 80s when I was growing up and lived right across the street, so I learned a lot of old-fashioned ways of doing things, and we didn't have a TV or anything like that, so I had a little bit different existence from my friends at school, and so I just had a natural interest, I guess, in self-sufficiency and that kind of stuff. And so about, I guess it would have been April of 2009, I hit upon this idea of writing a book online. I'm something of a writer. I mostly write science fiction and stuff like that. And I decided to try to do an update of a book that I really liked when I was a kid called, I believe it was called Survival Guns by Mel Tappan. And I just had kind of this, you know, one of those little brainstorms. And I thought, you know, if I posted chapter by chapter in a survival forum and I just picked one to do it in, you know, I could do kind of an updated version of that book, not based exactly on that book, but take the general idea of it and kind of use it as a springboard to discuss some of the updated firearms that are out there that seem to lend themselves to disaster readiness and preparedness and survivalism. And so I started writing this book. And anyways, that kind of led into a chance to do a fill-in on another survival-related podcast. And so I did an episode where I kind of used my book idea as a basic template, and I recorded an episode of, I think it was like an hour and 40 minutes long, so it was a pretty long episode. And I think the host split it into a couple parts, but I just talked about kind of off the cuff some things about survival firearms and some thoughts I had and tried to cover as comprehensively as I could in that amount of time. And there was such a good response from it. And I literally had, I can't remember, maybe 100 plus emails from people asking me kind of my viewpoint or input on different things related to survival firearms. And I thought, you know what? I'm not really a gun guru, but this is kind of cool to be able to share ideas and give feedback to people and offer suggestions. So I decided to try to do my own podcast, and I knew nothing. I don't know where your background comes from, Bob, but I've done a little bit in radio, and so I just kind of jumped in with both feet, and I said, hey, I'll just try to record a few episodes, and I tried to time them with when I was doing the guest hosting appearance. And it worked out. I all of a sudden had all these listeners and people are kind of coming out of the woodwork, and now I've been doing it since beginning of August, and I'm just amazed even now I have listeners all over the world, and they email me and ask me questions and give me, I guess, more credit than I feel I deserve as far as knowing anything, but it's been really enjoyable, and I find that the people in the survival and preparedness community are about the nicest people you'll ever meet. So I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, they sure are. They sure are some of the nicest people. Well, great. You know, thanks for telling us a little bit about you and your show and so forth. It's a good show. I did listen to that hour and 40-minute show that you did on survival firearms when you were a guest on the Survival Podcast, and I thought it was very well done. So why don't you go ahead and give out real quickly before we get started the website and the feed address and so forth where people can find your show.
Oh, sure. Well, thanks, Bob. The podcast episodes are located at chipmunk.podbean.com, and you can also find it on iTunes. Just do a search for Chipmunk Family Survival Podcast, as Bob mentioned. And I believe all the episodes are available in the feed, although I've had a little bit of a technical thing with a couple of the early episodes I'm working on. But, you know, you can subscribe to it there, and you'll find there are other survival-related podcasts out there, too. And I'm kind of a believer that if one podcast doesn't cover a certain type of topic, well, if you listen to a few different ones, you'll probably find a fairly comprehensive overview, you know, of the topics that you're interested in. I also have a blog, real quick, Bob. It's thechippermunk.blogspot.com. And I just posted a bunch of pictures from my attendance at the SHOT Show that was kind of fun. I just took some pictures randomly of some of the different booths and things, and I posted them there if anyone's interested in that sort of thing.
Okay, well, Chip, thanks for that introduction and telling us about your show. It's great. So let's talk about guns here. You know, it's one of my favorite subjects. You know, people that have been listening to this show know that I don't make this show all about firearms. I have a different podcast where I do that. But this one is about preparedness, and you kind of have an interesting take on guns for the end of the world as we know it, don't you?
Yeah, well, my approach is to not, I guess, romanticize firearms as though they're some sort of special object worthy of reverence. I consider them to be tools, just like, you know, a water purification system, just like you know, having a set of different things to cook with, or having a tent as a backup, or, you know, sleeping bags. You know, I just consider tools to be things that are a natural fit in a survival plan. And on my show, I talk a lot about having a survival plan, trying to plan for as many potential things that you can think of, and as part of that, I think firearms kind of fit into that a little bit, but I don't look at them as something, you know, it seems like sometimes the media tries to dramatize them either for good purposes, you know, for in their mind of having a movie seem to be more action-oriented, or for bad purposes, trying to push an agenda against, you know, private ownership of firearms. And so I've considered them a tool, like a hammer or a screwdriver. In my mind, there are certain firearms that work for certain specific tasks, and it's like trying to hammer in a nail with a screwdriver or with your cell phone. You know, you might be able to do it, but it's not going to be as successful as if you have the right tool for a job. And so I just consider firearms to be tools like anything else, and they have certain specific applications that they best fit for.
Well, I can't disagree with you on that. Okay, so my first question that I want to ask you is, let's say somebody listening to this show doesn't really know what to start to accumulate. You know, they've heard me say on this show before that I believe that guns is part of your preparations, but the idea that all you need is an AR-15 and a bag of MREs, and then you can survive for weeks and weeks on end, I think is a very preposterous idea. However, I think it's part of your preps. It's something that you should be preparing for, especially with the volatile situation that we have right now in this world. So where would you tell someone to start?
Well, I know that I have a little bit different perspective on this than some people in the survival and preparedness community. I don't think that firearms should be your starting point. I think there should be kind of a hierarchy of needs that you should look at. And for me, I kind of look at it, what's the thing that my body requires to be alive? And first and foremost, I consider water to be, you know, kind of at the top of that list. And then you know, because you can only survive a couple days without water, and even then you're going to be miserable during that time. And then I look at food as kind of your next tier of things you need to prepare for. And then I look at things like shelter, you know, being able to protect yourself from the elements. I have a little thing I talk about where I call it let's see, it's DESS. It's water to drink, food to eat, shelter, and something to help you stay warm, because otherwise hypothermia can set in even at higher temperatures than people think. And so, you know, you've got to protect yourself against those things. And then is where you get to your safety and security part. And I look at the procurement or the purchasing of firearms the same as I do a fire extinguisher or a fire alarm or other things. You hope you never have to use them, but if you ever do, they're going to be invaluable to you if you have to. And so what I would tell someone is, first, make sure you have a way to get potable drinking water if there's a disaster, because it seems like if you study Hurricane Katrina or whenever there's a hurricane or any kind of natural weather event, or even, you know, man-caused disasters like they euphemistically call terrorism now, if you can't get water, if there's no clean water supply, well, you know, you're going to have immediate problems within a day or two. And not only that, obviously, being able to flush toilets and maintain some level of sanitation gets impacted very quickly if there's a problem with water. So I tell people, you know, start with water. Make sure you've taken care of that. And then look at your food situation. Make sure you've got food. And that doesn't mean buy a couple crates of MREs and stuff them in the closet. It means, you know, buy stuff that you're actually going to be able to eat if you have children. And a lot of my listeners are younger families with, you know, kind of the family considerations to think of. I say make sure that you've provided whatever amount that you think you're going to need, a week or 2 weeks or 6 months. Some people have the finances to be able to afford, you know, maybe a couple years worth of food. Not everyone can do that, but, you know, I consider that to be the priority. And then make sure you have an alternative shelter situation in case your house were to burn down or there was an earthquake or something that would render your house uninhabitable. Make sure you have a way to keep your kids and yourself and your spouse or significant other or friends or neighbors warm, whether it's in a car or we've bought a couple tents just as a backup for that very situation. If we figure, if nothing else, we'll at least have a tent to stay in. And then we get around to the firearms part, and I think that's the part where I talk to people kind of in this fashion. I suggest to them, you know, buying a suitable firearm is kind of a specific choice that the individual has to consider. And really, the best way to do it, if you don't have any background in firearms, is to find a friend or someone you trust. You don't necessarily want to be asking around at your job, you know, to try to track down someone who's a shooter, but try to find people who are knowledgeable, who can give you some useful insights, not the kind of gun snob expert types that just seem to think that only what they like is the only consideration. But, you know, I've even done an episode I did on my podcast called the $500 Challenge, and it was how to be able to purchase an entire battery of firearms to meet pretty much all of your basic survival needs that are firearm related, something to hunt with, something to protect your family if that, you know, was a possibility that could come up, which obviously you never know what could happen, and then some means for small game hunting or pest elimination or dealing with varmints or something like a little .22. And you know, there are ways to be very fiscally cautious as you do this, but I think that if people do make the decision that they want to own a firearm, that what they should do is start by trying to get good information. And with the advent of the internet, you know, Bob, we have so much more information at our fingertips than ever before. Some of it is good, some of it, you know, may not be as accurate, but that's what we have to do, is kind of search that out. And that's where having someone who does know about firearms, who is familiar with some of the gun type topics, I think comes into play. And then having podcasts or things people can listen to get some other recommendations, I think, is useful. So I think that's the part that you and I can play in this, is we can give some recommendations and give our own perspectives, but, you know, we have our own built-in biases and suppositions that we act upon too. So I'd never suggest that my ideas are the be-all end-all, but I'll kind of offer my ideas and say, here's kind of why I take this approach. Here's why I think everyone should own a little .22 rifle. Here's an inexpensive option for a rifle that could be used for hunting, you know, medium-sized game if you have deer in your area. But, you know, the people who think they're just going to lay back a bunch of hunting ammo and go out and harvest all the food they want by hunting deer in a disaster situation are probably, you know, sorely mistaken, because I think there's going to be a lot of other people with that idea. And that's where having a little .22 for harvesting small game, you know, like squirrels or raccoons or possums, you know, the stuff that we don't like to think about eating, but if your life was on the line, I think, you know, most people would probably find a way to enjoy a new class of cuisine in their diet.
I agree. So you just basically led me into my first question with that statement that you just made right there. Let's talk about the 22 long rifle. I've read a lot of stuff on different forums, and I've listened to different podcasts, and everybody talks about the 22 as being the quintessential, you know, survival firearm. It's the must have. And I've even had people say, look, if I could only have one gun for survival, if for some reason I was only allowed to have one firearm, it would be the 22 long rifle. I don't really agree. I like the 22. I think it's excellent. It's a phenomenal tool. But if I only had one, I would choose something like a 20 gauge or a 410 shotgun. How do you feel about that?
Well, I definitely know what you speak of as far as kind of that argument back and forth of what's the ultimate perfect, you know, what will solve all of your survival related firearms type issues. And some people, you know, they have that idea. And I think the advantage people see in the 22 long rifle is typically the platforms that fire it are very light. You can carry a lot of ammo, and you can buy a lot of ammo very inexpensively. Even now, you know, now that we're kind of through that 2009 time period of when it was hard to find a lot of ammo, it was hard to find a lot of firearms-related things because they were just disappearing off the shelves as quickly as they were placed there. You know, I think you can still find the 22 ammo for relatively cheap, and so to a lot of people, that's an advantage. However, I can see your perspective for this reason. The 22, in its applications, is great. It's great for small, you know, like I mentioned, the really small game. But if that was all you had to protect yourself against, excuse me, a bunch of people outside your house that had bad intentions for you and your family, you would be wishing you had gotten something a little bit with a little bit more punch. Now, I've heard the accounts, the anecdotal stories about the 22 and really how devastating it can be. And sure, I mean, even air rifles, even slingshots, even, you know, bows and arrows can be very devastating if the force is applied in the right place, you know. But I personally think that when it comes to both medium-sized game in terms of hunting as well as for protection, you want something with a little bit more punch. And your 22 might take down an assailant, but it might be after he's already, you know, killed you, and so it really isn't to your advantage. And so I consider the 22 to fill a very specific niche, which is small game hunting, a pest elimination, you know, if you have issues with things that are getting into your crops or even things like feral dogs or something like that, and you don't want to expend the more expensive ammunition to deal with them. You know, I think they fill that niche great, and they're perfect for training people on. But in a real long-term disaster situation, you're probably not going to be doing a lot of training, you know, going out and shooting and drawing attention to yourself that you have firearms or that you're in an area. And so I would say the other perspective on the all-around firearm being a shotgun has some validity to it, because with slugs, you can typically shoot at longer distances than people think with slugs, and especially if you have a rifled barrel or something along those lines in rifle sights. With buckshot, you can handle, you know, you can use that on game if you have to, and it's a wonderful defensive tool, because, I mean, you just can't overemphasize how devastating double-aught buckshot or number four buckshot is, you know, on a target up close, unless you, you know, go out to the range and place a target at 10 yards or even 25 yards, and you'll be amazed at how powerful that is, even if you've been around shooting for a long time. And then with birdshot, you know, you can take small game again, and then that's where you have a chance to take birds on the wing. So as far as I'm concerned, that flexibility of the shotgun does give a lot of advantages and is much better for defensive purposes. The trade-off is, of course, the weight of both the platform is going to be heavier than a 22, and the ammo, you're not going to be able to carry nearly as much ammo for the corresponding amount of weight that it takes up. But, you know, if you're based in an area, if you're able to bug in or you're able to kind of operate out of an area as opposed to, you know, completely being a refugee on the run or something, that the weight of the ammo is not going to be as big of a deal for you. So that's probably not going to be as much of a consideration. But my solution would be have one of each if you can, Bob. Have a 22 for its purposes and a shotgun. And the 20 gauge is nice because it is lighter than the 12 gauge. Both the shotgun itself will be lighter, and you'll be able to carry more ammo. And so that has some great advantages. It's not quite as common as 12 gauge, but pretty close. And then the 410 gauge, especially for smaller framed people, or children learning to shoot a shotgun, I think that has wonderful advantages. Not to mention with some newer firearms like the Taurus Judge and some of those things that fire the 410 gauge in a really compact platform, you've got a great defensive tool at very short ranges. Not very long range, but it will be really capable up close if you ever needed to employ it for that reason.
Yeah, I don't care too much for the Taurus Judge, but I'll cover that in a minute. I'm glad you mentioned having both a 22 and a shotgun. I'm just a big fan of the shotgun. The reason is you touched on it. You talked about the versatility of the ammo. You know, what other firearm can you interchange ammo as much as you can, or mix and match ammo is what I'm trying to say, as you can with a shotgun? You know, you can't put five different types of ammo in a 22 and get a lot of good, reliable performance from it. You can't do that with a handgun. You can't do that with any 223 or 7.62 rifle. With shotguns, you can put anything. You can put slugs, birdshot, buckshot, a combination of those shots. You can even put, flare rounds in there in case you need to draw attention to yourself. I mean, it's just so incredibly versatile.
Yeah, and I think in a survival context, that is what makes, the argument, at least, at minimum, it's a great argument to say if you could only afford one firearm and you really could only carry one with you, that shotgun, the flexibility offered through it, being able to have that mix, and you can even have in the tube, if you have a good pump shotgun, you can have several different types of shot shells in it for dealing with whatever comes up. I know some people, for their home defense load, they'll have, for example, the first round that comes up is a birdshot, like a number 6 or 7.5, and then they have a couple buckshot, behind that, and then they'll have a slug as kind of their final thing, just in case, they feel like they're ever in a situation where they're dealing with a really big problem. They've kind of had their own natural progression of force. They've got the birdshot to kind of minimize any collateral damage, but if the person's wearing really heavy clothing or something like that, well, that's where the buckshot comes in, and if that doesn't stop them, well, the slug as the final, escalation of force should do the job. And so, like you said, there's nothing that's as flexible, and there, it just isn't possible for a rifle or a rimfire to offer that degree of flexibility. The trade-off, again, is the shot shells are going to weigh a little bit more, so you can't carry as much with them, but you can still carry a good amount if you get a belt or a bandolero or something like that.
Yeah, and the argument of how much ammo can you carry, I don't put a lot of stock in that, and I'll tell you why. Feel free to disagree if you want, because I'm a real open-minded guy. I don't plan on being a refugee in a stink-hit-the-fan event, and I really don't suggest that to anybody. I don't suggest that you hit the streets and become a refugee where all you have is what you carry on your back and what you carry on your belt. So everybody that says, oh, well, the 22 ammo is so much lighter, I can carry 500 rounds of 22 ammo and it's so much lighter than shotgun ammo. Yes, it is, but whether you've bugged out or not, you're probably going to bug out in a vehicle. And let's face it, you can put a lot of shotgun shells in a vehicle. I don't think a refugee status is a very good idea, do you?
No, in fact, it's funny that you say that, Bob, because I've mentioned a good number of times that what you want to avoid at all costs, I believe, in a disaster situation is becoming a refugee, is getting herded in with a bunch of other essentially defenseless people who are reliant on the goodwill of others to survive. And you can look at what's happened in places like Sudan, or even what happened with Hurricane Katrina in our country. There are just so many disadvantages to being on the road and being away from any system of support other than what government or emergency services can provide for you. So in my mind, the idea of bugging out is really only applicable if there is a natural disaster or something in your area that you will die if you stay in the area. When I was a kid, Mount St. Helens blew, and I lived in Portland, Oregon, which is, you know, really the closest major city to there. And I remember I was not quite four when it happened, and I remember there was this department store that had a parking structure, like, right on the roof of the store. The store was located under the parking structure, and so you parked on the roof of this store, which is kind of weird. But anyways, and we watched Mount St. Helens. I remember this was one of my earliest memories. And, you know, so a situation like that, the people that lived close by that mountain, not everybody evacuated when that blew in 1980, and some of the people died, you know, who didn't. And there's, you know, there was one guy, Harry Truman, who was very famous for saying, "I'm just going to stay put," and he did, and he died. And so that's the situation where I think a bug out is an option. Otherwise, this idea of, you know, going Mad Max and going out onto the highways and stuff, I think is very dangerous. And I think you're really your best bet, if you can do it, is to stay in your home where you have time to build up provisions, where you know the area, you can hopefully coordinate with neighbors, you can be found by those looking for you, or vice versa. And I do think sometimes people have more this idea of they're fearful of, you know, governmental type issues or whatever, that would be the reason that would compel them to kind of bug out and run out to the woods. And, you know, maybe there could be a scenario where that could come into play, but I agree with you in general. If you are going to have to leave, hopefully you'll have your car and the capability of carrying at least some of the things you would need for your day-to-day necessities. But, you know, the idea of just going out and walking the streets and whatever you can carry with you, you know, that it puts you at great risk, and I think that should be your absolute last option.
Yeah, and again, if you're going to bug out, like I said, 99% of the time, you'll be taking a vehicle of some sort, and you can take a lot of shotgun or rifle or handgun ammunition with you while you're in your vehicle. So, okay, well, I just wanted to throw that out there because everybody talks about how much they can carry, and I don't really think it's all that big of a deal. Okay, so Chip, I want to make another comment here and get you to chime in. The tourist judge, I hear a lot about that firearm. For those people who are listening to this that don't really know what that is, it's made by Taurus. It is an actual revolver. It's a revolver that shoots 45 long Colt projectiles, and it also shoots 410 shotgun shells. And I think it comes in 3-inch and 4-inch barrel lengths now. What I don't like about that, and again, I don't mind people disagreeing with me. So, Chip, if you got a difference of opinion, that's fine. What I don't like about it is I see it as more of a novelty firearm, really. 410 ammo is not the easiest to find. It's pretty expensive. 45 long Colt, unless you're a reloader, is not that easy to find, and it's pretty expensive as well. And I know, you know, Taurus is selling a lot of them, because people are kind of enamored with the coolness of it. And if you want a cool gun, great. But I don't see that much as a survival gun, do you?
I would agree with you on that. I think that they're kind of cool looking. They look like the main character in the movie Blade Runner, played by Harrison Ford. It looks kind of like his gun. They have a really neat visual appeal. But basically what they are is a... Like you said, I think in a general sense, they're kind of a novelty item because they're not very accurate. The fact that you can shoot 410 gauge shells, shot shells in it, as well as the 45 Colt, means that if when you are firing the 45 Colt projectile, they have to go quite a distance before they get, you know, reach the forcing cone and go out the barrel. So they're not terribly accurate from what I've seen. And the only way that you can have a firearm that has a shotgun barrel that short is to have it rifled and technically be a pistol, you know, a handgun, like a revolver in this case. So, I don't know. I agree with you on that. It seems like for very, very short range, like as a anti-carjacking firearm, they're great. But any use other than that, they're probably just something cool to show your friends and say, "Hey, look what I have," you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I totally agree. Good point about the anti-carjacking gun. That's probably a very, very good use for that. All right, so let's talk handguns for a minute. Now, before we get into handguns, people have heard me say on this show that I think that having one of each type of firearm is important for preparing yourself for any kind of a crap hit the fan event. And when I say one of each type, what I mean by that is one 22, one handgun, one pistol, and one rifle, centerfire rifle. And if you agree with that, tell me. And if you do, give me some or give the listeners some ideas of what you think that is that they should put together for those types of guns.
Well, because I have a lot of listeners who are on a fairly fixed budget, I usually try to think in terms of what's the least expensive way of procuring your basic needs. And so I agree with that. I think you need a centerfire rifle for both defense and for that nebulous hunting idea. You may or may not find that you're in an area that is game-rich enough in a disaster for you to really hunt, but you want to have that option at least. And you might, you know, I can't think of the specific scenario, but you could be in a situation where you have a guy shooting at you from a long distance and you need to try to stop that from happening, you know, kind of a counter-sniper thing, and that's where I think a centerfire rifle is indispensable. Along with that, I would say a shotgun, for the reasons we previously articulated, is probably a must-have, and a .22 rifle for that same reason, if you can, again, if you can afford it. And then some sort of pistol or a handgun, whether a revolver or a semi-automatic pistol or whatever, something that you can have with you at all times. And I know you discuss a lot of the different aspects of handguns on your other show, but, you know, to me, in a survival context, a handgun is to have a gun with you at all times. You can't have a rifle slung over your shoulder when you're hoeing the ground, you know, to dig up potatoes. You can't have a rifle slung over your shoulder at all times, you know, but a handgun you can always have with you. And to me, that's what makes it kind of a necessity if you can do it. Not everyone can afford, again, to buy one of every category, but if you can possibly do it, I suggest, you know, a centerfire rifle, even if it's just one of those $70 Mosin Nagant Russian imports, those big, they look kind of like a telephone pole with a barrel sticking out the end. buy one of those, then you have a centerfire rifle, and it will work for hunting, it will work for, you know, whatever kind of needs, and you probably will find it indispensable at that price for, you know, just to have a piece of history, if nothing else. And you can buy a single-barreled shotgun that's not as advantageous as a repeater like a pump or a semi-auto, but just a single-barreled shotgun, if you learn to reload quickly, would probably meet most of your shotgun needs, and you can find those for under $100 usually. And then at, you know, 22, you can buy a Marlin 60 semi-automatic 22 rifle sometimes for $80, $100, $120 used. Or if you have a little more money, a Ruger 10/22 is a great option as a 22 rifle. You know, and then for pistols, anything from just an inexpensive old 38 special revolver to if you have the money for a nice 1911 or a Glock or an HK or, you know, any of those, a Smith & Wesson M&P, or, you know, there's so many choices if you have the finances for it. Not everyone does, but if you can have something on your person at all times, preferably if you get your concealed carry license in times of normalcy, but even in a disaster situation, you're going to have to determine, you know, what your life is worth to you, and you'll have to make specific choices on what it's going to take to keep yourself alive. But if you at least own a handgun, you have the option, you know. So I agree with you. If you can do it, it's good to have something in each of those major categories. And if you can't, that's where those discussions about, you know, like whether a 22 or a shotgun is kind of your fill every category as best as possible comes into play. But ideally, if you can scrounge up the money, it's good to have something in each of those categories.
What do you think of double barrel side-by-side shotguns? I kind of like those coach guns, especially some of the coach guns that have the screw-in choke tubes that you can screw into the barrel. So you could have one barrel with one choke and another barrel with another. And I kind of like those because there's no action, so it means that the shotgun is overall shorter, the length of pull is shorter, and it seems like they're just easier to handle. What do you think of those?
I really like them. When I was a kid, there was a design called a Rossi Overland. I think it was about an 18 or 20 inch barrel, and it had had the extended hammers or the exposed hammers, and I just thought they looked so cool. And that was one of the things when I was at the SHOT Show, I got to handle a couple different side-by-side, you know, the short ones. I'm not talking about your long-barreled, you know, 28-inch barreled sporting shotguns. I'm talking about, I think what you're mentioning is the 20-inch barrel, you know, your home defense or your defense of the stagecoach type of shotgun. And I really like those. You obviously are limited to two shots, but, you know, two shots in most situations probably is going to be about what you're going to be firing. And if you learn to reload quickly and you can get, you know, extract those shells fast and put in fresh ones, I think a double-barreled shotgun can work great. And I like the feel for them. They feel very natural. They're naturally pointed, even though, you know, you have two different barrels that have to kind of be built in such a way where they are correctly registered or whatever the term is, where they'll both point at the same location. But, you know, when you actually handle one and feel how light they are, I think they would be a great option for people for survival purposes, other than, of course, the fact that you're limited in the ammo capacity and the fact that, you know, they tend to be a little bit more expensive even than some of the lower-end pumps like a Maverick 88 or even a Mossberg 500 or a Remington 870 Express.
Yeah, I think the double-barrel shotguns are excellent for home defense, too. I'm not a big fan of a shotgun for home defense. I'd rather use a handgun, quite frankly, for a number of reasons, and I've covered that on my show before.
Sure.
So even though I'm not a big fan of the shotgun for home defense, if I were to use one, I really like those double barrel side-by-sides, especially the coach guns, because they're so short, they're convenient. And you know what? Think about this. Even if you have to jump into a vehicle and you got to flee, it's a lot easier to maneuver those little short coach guns inside of a vehicle than it is a big pump gun. Even a pump shotgun with an 18-inch barrel. Those of you listening to this show, just measure one of those. Measure the length of a pump shotgun with an 18-inch barrel, and then measure the length of a coach gun with an 18 or even 20-inch barrel, and you'll see how much shorter the coach gun is. Inside of a vehicle, that makes a big difference.
Oh, definitely. You don't have to have, you know, the room for the chamber in a side-by-side, because basically you just slide the shot shells right in. You know, the chamber's just kind of right there behind the barrel, as opposed to having, you know, to have a repeater type action. And so, yeah, they can typically be several inches shorter. And like you said, they feel handier, they point quicker. And I really like pumps. I mean, don't get me wrong, I definitely consider two of my favorite firearms in the world to be Mossberg's 500 model and the different variations of that and the Remington 870. But as you said, there are some advantages in terms of the dimensions, the size of a good double barrel. And again, we're talking the coach guns, not those nice, expensive, long-barreled side-by-sides or over-unders, you know, that are quite a bit more expensive. And I do think some of the importers, when I was at SHOT Show, I remember, I think it was Sentry International, which sometimes has a hit or miss reputation on some things, but they were bringing in some little coach guns that had the exposed hammers, which I like. I don't like the hidden hammer type effect, because I like to be able to visually tell at just a glance whether or not it's cocked and ready to go, you know.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up about the exposed hammer. The exposed hammer double barrels, I prefer those as well. Okay, well, the last thing I want to do here, we're kind of running up against the time limit because I don't like for these to go on too long, Chip. Any final thoughts for somebody that is approaching guns from a preparedness standpoint?
Yeah, well, I think that when you're coming at it from a preparedness standpoint, it's different
some if you're a hunter, you want to get into target shooting, or you want to do something like, you know, the three-gun competitions or cowboy action shooting or something. It's a definite different mindset, because what you're doing is you're trying to get a tool that you need. And so you can't be sentimental about it. You can't just go on, oh, that looks cool. You can't just say, well, you know, this is what all my buddies have, so I want to have the same thing they do. You have to look at your own situation. You have to not just look at now, but you have to kind of project into the future, you know, what are my needs for this firearm, or just for firearms in general? Am I going to be trying to teach other people to shoot it, in which case you don't want to be buying a 300 Winchester Magnum or something, you know, as your first firearm purchase. And so, you know, there's a lot of considerations. If you have any kind of background in firearms, that sort of helps, but even then, you're looking at a totally different set of parameters for buying a survival-type firearm. You need something that's going to be dependable and reliable. To me, that's the number one thing over anything else, is it has to be dependable and reliable, because my life could very well depend on it, as could the life of my family. And I have young children, and so I have that dad, very protective sort of instinct, you know, built in. So reliability, dependability, to me, are the major considerations. And then I think there are advantages in selecting a suitable caliber for whatever purposes you think you're going to need it for. If you think you're going to be hunting elk in your area to get food, and you know, that's going to be some of your food supply, you might not want to opt for a 223 as your only centerfire, because it you could probably take an elk, but you wouldn't necessarily want to have to limit yourself to that. And that's where that idea of buying a lesser expensive, you know, like a surplus rifle, like a Mosin Nagant or a Lee Enfield, or, you know, something like that, to me comes into play. My favorite survival firearm, I'll just tell you, Bob, is probably an SKS, and that is because, you know, they've gone up in price in recent years, but for a long time you could buy them for very reasonable prices. They're fairly comparable to a 30-30 in terms of power, and if you have some good soft point ammo for them, you could use them for medium-sized game if you had to. They were, you know, very reliable, very robust, probably overbuilt for the cartridge they fire, but they, to me, were kind of the prototypical survival rifle, because you could use them for defense or for hunting needs, both. And so if I were trying to recommend to someone who didn't have a lot of money, but, you know, they were looking for a firearm that could meet most of their needs, and they wanted a center fire. Again, we're not talking a rimfire 22 or a shotgun. I would say, you know, something like an SKS could be a great option for that, because you have a semi-auto, so it can fire fairly quickly. And if you learn to use stripper clips, or some of them actually take detachable box magazines, so those are good options, you know, they really can, in my mind, be a great, still relatively low-priced option for that. But, you know, if someone's coming from a background where they don't know anything about firearms, I would say they need to get a little bit of an education first. Go to a range in your area and see if they rent firearms, and better yet, if you can pay a little bit and have an instructor come out and help you, and learn how to safely handle firearms. Because, you know, you hear all these things about the statistics of firearm in the home is dangerous or whatnot, and I think sometimes that's put forth to try to advance an agenda. But the truth is, if you learn how to safely handle a firearm, it's no more dangerous than a hammer or a car or a nail gun or a baseball bat. You know, it's all in the application of it. And so before someone does go and try to decide to purchase a firearm, I would make sure you're comfortable safely loading and unloading the type that you're going to get, and, you know, go to local firearm stores and take advantage of their expertise. Don't necessarily believe everything they say. I don't know about you, Bob, but I've been in some gun stores where the guys were pontificating about something, and I knew they were totally making it up. You know, it was clear they really didn't know what they were talking about. But often, they're the ones who do know the good applications for different types of firearms. So whether it's a handgun you're buying for defense, and I think right now there are more and more people who are kind of looking at what's happening, not only in our country, but look what's happening in Egypt right now and Tunisia and these different places, and thinking, you know, the world's not the same place that I've been used to. And so and after this shooting down in Tucson, this horrible shooting, you had just a huge jump in people buying firearms. I think both because they're worried about something like that happening and they want to be able to protect themselves, as well as they're worried about more government regulation and not being able to buy something down the road. So think about that too. I say on my show fairly often that we're living in the good old days. Right now is the good old days. Now is the time when you can go out and legally purchase the things that could be indispensable if there ever is a true survival situation that comes up. And you don't have a guarantee that a year from now you'll be able to do that, or 5 years from now. And even now, some of the stories in the media are new pushes for regulations on firearms. So someday we're going to look back on this, I think, and realize that this was the good old days. So if you have the financial wherewithal to do it, and if you can get some training or get some help from other people who are knowledgeable and make sure that you're able to safely do so, now's a great time to try to buy a firearm. And if you don't have much money, there are very inexpensive options. And if you have a lot of money, there are very high-end options. You can get tricked out firearms that will do everything but, you know, open cans for you. And, you know, it's just, there's something for everybody, which is one cool thing about really this time period in history is when it comes to firearms, there are more options, I think, than we've ever seen before.
I completely agree. Thanks for bringing up the SKS. I don't think I've ever talked about the SKS on my show, and it's a fantastic rifle. Yeah, you're right. It is overbuilt for what it is, and some people say, oh, well, you know, it only holds 10 rounds, but you know what? 10 rounds of 7.62 by 39 is probably going to get you out of most situations, and you can still get SKSs for a pretty good price. So thanks for bringing that up. As we wrap this up, why don't you go ahead one more time for everybody, give out your website, tell people where they can find your podcast, and all that good stuff.
Sure. The podcast is again located at chipmunk.podbean.com. My real name is Chipmunk. Well, my parents didn't name me Chip, but it's a nickname I picked up in college, and I do talk about it occasionally on my show because it really works with the preparedness mindset. You know how chipmunks store up acorns and stuff for the winter? Well, it's kind of the same approach I take in trying to anticipate issues that could come up down the road and trying to make yourself and your family as well-positioned to deal with those things as possible. I also have the blog over at thechippermunk.blogspot.com, and I'm hoping to finish up my manuscript on my book, Firearms for the End of the World as We Know It, and we're going to try to publish that. I actually have someone who contacted me and who's willing to do the layout and put all the pictures together and do all the hard stuff on that end. And so I'm trying to finish up that manuscript. But it's going to basically be kind of an updated, you know, idea of here's the considerations in a survival context. Here's how many options are out there and some of the things to think about. And, you know, just give some ideas or I guess some direction to people who really don't know much of anything. I wrote it with that in mind, trying to help people, trying to provide a tangible, you know, written resource that people can use as a reference, because not everybody has, you know, a broad background in firearms, and not everybody has a bunch of buddies who are really knowledgeable who can point them in the right direction. So I thought, you know, this would be kind of a nice service to some people. And I think the thread that it was posted in has had like 150,000 views or something. So I know a lot of people have accessed it and have read through it, and it seems like there's a lot of interest in that. So I'm going to try to publish both a PDF copy, you know, kind of for electronic readers like Amazon Kindle and stuff like that, and also do a hard copy for people like me who actually prefer, you know, real paper books. But anyways, that's along the same lines of what we've been discussing today, Bob, and I'll try to let you know when that gets completed in case any of your listeners are interested in anything along.
Hey, everybody, Bob Main still here. I know I just finished up the show, but there's something that I forgot to talk about in the comments, and so I am going to go ahead and tack it on here at the end of the show. I want to play an audio clip for you here, and you'll just hear the music close out the show after this clip. But this is former Vice President Dick Cheney calling for gun control. Yeah, you heard me right. This is former Vice President Dick Cheney coming out in favor of some more gun control. Here you go. Here's the clip, and the music will close out the show. Have a good one.
Do you think that this incident, that there is something that you would support, measures in gun control that should be changed that could help avoid this in the future?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what they would be. I'd certainly be willing to listen to ideas. I've always been a gun advocate, obviously had the strong voting record on behalf of the Second Amendment. That's just what I believe. Whether or not there's some measure there in terms of limiting the size of the magazine that you can buy to go with a semi-automatic weapon, we've had that in place before. Maybe it's appropriate to reestablish that kind of thing. But I think you do have to be careful, obviously, that Supreme Court's ruled on the Second Amendment. It's an important part of our historic legacy. We're looking for ways to make sure this never happens again, but you've still got to go back to the fact that it looks like the cause of this particular tragedy was this one individual who apparently has a very serious mental problem.